Chapter 152. Wei, immediately after Lightwood had gone out to the train, and he had been hurriedly reading the printed hills and notices on the wall. He had had a wandering interest in what was said among the people waiting there and passing to and fro. He had drawn near, at about the time when Mrs. Milvey mentioned Lizzie Hexham, and had remained near, since. Though all was glancing towards the door by which Lightwood had gone out, he stood with his back towards them, and his gloved hands clasped behind him. There was now so evident a faltering upon him, expressive of indecision whether or no he should express his having heard himself referred to, that Mr. Milvey spoke to him. "I cannot recall your name," apostrophe he said, "but I remember to have seen you in your school." Apostrophe, "My name is Bradley Headstone, sir," apostrophe he replied, backing into a more retired place. "I ought to have remembered it," apostrophe said Mr. Milvey, giving him his hand. "I hope you are well? A little overworked, I am afraid?" Apostrophe, "Yes, I am overworked just at present, sir." Apostrophe, "Had no play in your last holiday time?" Apostrophe, "No, sir." Apostrophe, "All work and no play, Mr. Headstone, will not make dullness, in your case, I dare say, but it will make dyspepsia, if you don't take care." Apostrophe, "I will endeavor to take care, sir. Might I beg leave to speak to you, outside, a moment?" Apostrophe, "By all means." Apostrophe, "It was evening, and the office was well lighted." The schoolmaster, who had never remitted his watch on Lightwood's door, now moved by another door to a corner without, where there was more shadow than light, and said, plucking at his gloves, "One of your ladies, sir, mentioned within my hearing a name that I am acquainted with, I may say, well acquainted with, the name of the sister of an old pupil of mine. He was my pupil for a long time, and has got on and gone upward rapidly. The name of Hexham. The name of Lizzie Hexham." Apostrophe, he seemed to be a shy man, struggling against nervousness, and spoke in a very constrained way. The break he set between his last two sentences was quite embarrassing to his hearer. "Yes," apostrophe replied Mr. Milvey. "We are going down to see her." Apostrophe, "I gathered as much, sir. I hope there is nothing amiss with the sister of my old pupil. I hope no bereavement has befallen her. I hope she is in no affliction? Has lost no relation?" Apostrophe, Mr. Milvey thought this a man with a very odd manner, and a dark downward look, but he answered in his usual open way, "I am glad to tell you, Mr. Headstone, that the sister of your old pupil has not sustained any such loss. You thought I might be going down to bury someone?" Apostrophe, "That may have been the connection of ideas, sir, with your clerical character, but I was not conscious of it." "Then you are not, sir?" Apostrophe, a man with a very odd manner indeed, and with a lurking look that was quite oppressive. "No. In fact," apostrophe said Mr. Milvey, "since you are so interested in the sister of your old pupil, I may as well tell you that I am going down to marry her." Apostrophe, the schoolmaster started back. "Not to marry her, myself," apostrophe said Mr. Milvey, with a smile, "because I have a wife already. To perform the marriage service at her wedding." Apostrophe, Bradley Headstone caught hold of a pillar behind him. If Mr. Milvey knew an ashy face when he saw it then. "You are quite ill, Mr. Headstone." Apostrophe, "It is not much, sir. It will pass over very soon. I am accustomed to be seized with giddiness. Don't let me detain you, sir. I stand in need of no assistance. I thank you. Much obliged by your sparing me these minutes of your time." Apostrophe, as Mr. Milvey, who had no more minutes to spare, made a suitable reply and turned back into the office, he observed the schoolmaster to lean against the pillar with his hat in his hand, and to pull at his neckcloth, as if he were trying to tear it off. The Reverend Frank accordingly directed the notice of one of the attendants to him, by saying, There is a person outside who seems to be really ill, and to require some help, though he says he does not. Apostrophe, Lightwood had by this time secured their places, and the departure bell was about to be rung. They took their seats, and were beginning to move out of the station, when the same attendant came running along the platform, looking into all the carriages. Oh, you are here, sir. Apostrophe, he said, springing on the step, and holding the window frame by his elbow, as the carriage moved. That person you pointed out to me is in a fit. Apostrophe, I infer from what he told me, that he is subject to such attacks. He will come to, in the air, in a little while. Apostrophe, he was took very bad to be sure, and was biting and knocking about him, the man said, furiously. Would the gentleman give him his card, as he had seen him first? The gentleman did so, with the explanation, that he knew, no more of the man attacked than, that he was a man of a very respectable occupation, who had said he was out of health, as his appearance would of itself have indicated. The attendant received the card, watched his opportunity for sliding down, slid down, and so it ended. Then, the train rattled among the housetops, and among the ragged sides of houses torn down to make way for it, and over the swarming streets, and under the fruitful earth, until it shot across the river, bursting over the quiet surface like a bombshell, and gone again, as if it had exploded in the rush of smoke and steam and glare. A little more, and again it roared across the river, a great rocket, spurning the watery turnings and doublings with ineffable contempt, and going straight to its end, as Father Time goes to his. To whom it is no matter, what living waters run high or low, reflect the heavenly lights and darknesses, produce their little growth of weeds and flowers, turn here, turn there, are noisier still, are troubled or at rest, for their course has one sure termination, though their sources and devices are many. Then, a carriage ride succeeded, near the solemn river, stealing away by night, as all things steal away, by night and by day, so quietly yielding to the attraction of the lodestone rock of eternity. And the nearer they drew to the chamber where Eugene lay, the more they feared, that they might find his wanderings done. At last they saw its dim light shining out, and it gave them hope. Though Lightwood faltered as he thought. If he were gone, she would still be sitting by him. Apostrophe, but he lay quiet, half in stupor, half in sleep. Bella, entering with a raised admonitory finger, kissed Lizzie softly, but said not a word. Neither did any of them speak, but all sat down at the foot of the bed, silently waiting. And now, in this night watch, mingling with the flow of the river, and with the rush of the train, came the questions into Bella's mind again. What could be in the depths of that mystery of John's? Why was it that he had never been seen by Mr. Lightwood, whom he still avoided? When would that trial come, through which her faith in, and her duty to, her dear husband, was to carry her, rendering him triumphant? For, that had been his term. Her passing through the trial, was to make the man she loved with all her heart, triumphant. Term not to sink out of sight in Bella's breast. Far on in the night, Eugene opened his eyes. He was sensible, and said at once, "How does the time go? Has our Mortimer come back?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Lightwood was there immediately, to answer for himself. "Yes, Eugene, and all is ready." Apostrophe, dear boy. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Eugene with a smile, "We both thank you heartily. Lizzie, tell them how welcome they are, and that I would be eloquent if I could." Apostrophe, there is no need, apostrophe, said Mr. Milvey. "We know it. Are you better, Mr. Rayburn?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "I am much happier, apostrophe," said Eugene. "Much better too, I hope?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, Eugene turned his eyes towards Lizzie, as if to spare her, and answered nothing. Then, they all stood around the bed, and Mr. Milvey, opening his book, began the service, so rarely associated with the shadow of death, so inseparable in the mind from a flush of life and gaiety, and hope and health and joy. Bella thought how different from her own sunny little wedding, and wept. Mrs. Milvey overflowed with pity, and wept too. The doll's dressmaker, with her hands before her face, wept in her golden bower, reading in a low clear voice, and bending over Eugene, who kept his eyes upon him. Mr. Milvey did his office with suitable simplicity. As the bridegroom could not move his hand, they touched his fingers with the ring, and so put it on the bride. When the two plighted their troth, she laid her hand on his, and kept it there. When the ceremony was done, and all the rest departed from the room, she drew her arm under his head, and laid her own head down upon the pillow by his side. "Undraw the curtains, my dear girl," apostrophe said Eugene, "after a while, and let us see our wedding day." Apostrophe, the sun was rising, and his first rays struck into the room, as she came back, and put her lips to his. "I bless the day," apostrophe said Eugene. "I bless the day," apostrophe said Lizzie. "You have made a poor marriage of it, my sweet wife," apostrophe said Eugene. "A shattered, graceless fellow, stretched at his length here, and next to nothing for you, when you are a young widow. Apostrophe, I have made the marriage that I would have given all the world to dare to hope for," apostrophe she replied. "You have thrown yourself away," apostrophe said Eugene, shaking his head. "But you have followed the treasure of your heart. My justification is that you had thrown that away first, dear girl. Apostrophe, no. I had given it to you. Apostrophe, the same thing, my poor Lizzie. Apostrophe, hush. Hush. A very different thing." Apostrophe, there were tears in his eyes, and she besought him to close them. "No," apostrophe said Eugene, again shaking his head. "Let me look at you, Lizzie, while I can. You brave, devoted girl. You heroine." Apostrophe, her own eyes filled under his praises. And when he mustered strength to move his wounded head a very little way, and lay it on her bosom, the tears of both fell. "Lizzie," apostrophe said Eugene, after a silence, "when you see me wandering away from this refuge that I have so ill deserved, speak to me by my name, and I think I shall come back." Apostrophe, "yes, dear Eugene." Apostrophe, "there. Apostrophe, he exclaimed, smiling. "I should have gone then, but for that." Apostrophe, a little while afterwards, when he appeared to be sinking into insensibility, she said, in a calm, loving voice, "Eugene, my dear husband." Apostrophe, he immediately answered, "There again. You see how you can recall me." Apostrophe, and afterwards, when he could not speak, he still answered by a slight movement of his head upon her bosom. The sun was high in the sky, when she gently disengaged herself to give him the stimulants and nourishment he required. The utter helplessness of the wreck of him that lay cast ashore there now alarmed her, but he himself appeared a little more hopeful. "Ah, my beloved Lizzie," apostrophe, he said, faintly, "how shall I ever pay all I owe you, if I recover?" Apostrophe, "don't be ashamed of me," apostrophe she replied, "and you will have more than paid all." Apostrophe, "it would require a life, Lizzie, to pay all, more than a life." Apostrophe, "live for that, then. Live for me, Eugene. Live to see how hard I will try to improve myself, and never to discredit you." Apostrophe, "my darling girl," apostrophe he replied, rallying more of his old manner than he had ever yet got together. "On the contrary, I have been thinking whether it is not the best thing I can do, to die." Apostrophe, "the best thing you can do, to leave me with a broken heart?" Apostrophe, "I don't mean that, my dear girl. I was not thinking of that. What I was thinking of was this. Out of your compassion for me, in this maimed and broken state, you make so much of me, you think so well of me, you love me so dearly. Apostrophe, heaven knows I love you dearly. Apostrophe, and heaven knows I prize it. Well, if I live, you'll find me out. Apostrophe, I shall find out that my husband has a mine of purpose and energy, and will turn it to the best account. Apostrophe apostrophe I hope so, dearest Lizzie, apostrophe said Eugene, wistfully, and yet somewhat whimsically. I hope so. But I can't summon the vanity to think so. How can I think so, looking back on such a trifling wasted youth as mine? I humbly hope it, but I daren't believe it. There is a sharp misgiving in my conscience, that if I were to live, I should disappoint your good opinion and my own, and that I ought to die, my dear. Apostrophe apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.